You are listening to engaging and exciting conversation on the Radiant Culture Podcast.
Get ready. Now.
What's up, everybody? This is the Radiant Culture Podcast, and this is your host, Cookie Monster. And yeah, it's just me today. Well, kind of. I miss T-Mac. I really do. But anyway, it's fine.
She's coming back soon.
Okay, fine. She's coming back soon. She's a whole mommy now. And we have Grace, but Grace is not here today as well. So I guess we're graceless. yeah, I just had to say that. But anyway, this is us today. And today I'm joined by two very special people. The one you know, and the one you may not know, but you're going to know. So I'm joined by Mr. Kent, the producer.
Yeah, back.
What's popping?
On the mic.
Back on
good.
The mic.
I'm good.
Yeah, it's good to have you on this side.
I've been on the mic more this year than any other year. Wow.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool.
T-Mac needs to come.
Yeah, but we like it. We like it.
I don't
want
to do this anymore.
But you know, dude, do you know this guy used to rap? This guy used to be behind the mic a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I miss those days.
Please
yeah,
drop a
they
bar.
They should come back. They should come
like,
back.
I'll make a beat and everything just to see it happen.
Okay, I don't know if that's going to happen, but yeah, this guy is like rapper par excellence, but I guess, you know, he's not trying to act all grown up and stuff. But anyway, and we are joined by a very, very special lady, Danai.
Yay, whoop whoop, yeah. In the building.
Danai in the building.
Yes.
Danai Madondo, right?
Yes, that's
okay.
Nice.
Yeah, I was about to call
say
you.
Say it twice.
I was
say
about to
again.
Call you by your maiden, by your maiden name, which is like, yeah.
Yeah.
But Danai Madondo, Danai is somebody that we have known for yonks.
Yeah.
For many, many, many years.
Many guys, I think you saw me as a toddler, hey?
Yeah, yeah, we did. We did,
wow.
Actually, we did.
Yeah, literally, yeah.
And look at you now. Mommy and
imagine someone did that to my children. Yeah,
look at you in your glory.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio
yeah.
today.
Thank you.
So what I'm gonna do really quickly is I'm gonna ask you to introduce yourself and what you do,
okay.
Because that's gonna lead us into the discussion for today, and I think it'll be good for people to get to know all the wonderful things that you do.
Me, oh my gosh. Whenever anyone asks me to do an introduction, I'm like, where do I begin? Because I do so much. But I'm mostly known for being a fashion designer.
Right.
Self-taught textile artist and multidisciplinary storyteller. My story began as a creative director in advertising. And then I've been playing a lot with brand building, whether it's from a corporate point of view or individual brand building, and I ventured off into film because I'm so passionate about storytelling.
Mm.
I've worked as a wardrobe consultant for multiple Pan-African productions. So yeah, I'm that person who, if it's creative, if it requires some fashion, if it requires some out-the-box thinking, if it requires some curiosity, call me in.
You are that person.
I am that person.
You wear a lot of hats, and you're a mom, of course.
Yes, mommy.
Yeah, and a wife.
Yeah, imagine. Someone put a ring on it, huh?
Someone put a ring on it.
Somebody did.
Yeah, I think your dude is cool.
He's cool. He's a man.
Yeah, so maybe we'll have you guys here, the both of you, one day.
That'll be awesome.
The different energies. You'll be like, how the heck did this guy, how did this chick back on his own?
Oh.
Hey, I got a game, huh?
Wow. Okay. There we go.
Okay, I'm loving this already. So today, the topic of our discussion is Gucci, art, and God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the title, you can hear that we're going to be talking about fashion, we're going to be talking about art, and we're going to be talking about God, obviously.
Yeah.
And I feel Danai is the right person to...
Absolutely.
I'm glad.
Yeah. You look the part.
It's intimidating, but I'm glad at the same time. Yeah.
You look the part, and of course, you know, you've been in the industry for a long time. So we're going to be zoning in particularly on the fashion side of things. And of course, you know, we're going to throw in a couple of other things. But tell us a bit about your journey. Did you always know that you were into fashion? Did you always know that you wanted to be a fashion designer? How did that come about?
No, I didn't always know. But then when I look back at it now, I think fashion was always a part of who I was and my family background. Mm. My grandmother was just always making stuff. My aunt was a seamstress. Even my own sister and her friends group were like really fashionable, and I would notice and pay attention to it. And I think it was maybe later on in my life when I had encounters with the local self-taught fashion designers, and I said, wow, this is actually something that someone can do as a profession. Mm. Not only am I a Black woman in Zimbabwe with traditional parents that want you to be an accountant, a doctor, or something respectable in society, you know, but I really saw a potential. Mm. And I think the thing that finally sort of like pushed me towards pursuing fashion was when I saw this designer from Nigeria called Segoi Diola on CNN. And to be honest, her aesthetic is very different from mine, but I loved the power that the visuals and the clothing held. It really drew me in. I said, there's something about the way this art is making me feel that I feel like that's what I must do. Hmm. It was a conversation. I didn't even understand the conversation that was happening. But when I look back at it now, it was contemporary avant-garde African apparel, very performative in its aesthetic. Hmm. Some might even call it costume. But there was a presence that the visuals held. And I knew that, I think this is my language.
Wow.
Fashion is my language.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, we're living in a world where, you know, everything is so centered around fashion, around image.
Yeah.
You know, everyone concentrates, okay, not everybody, but there's just a general focus on how you look.
Yeah.
How you present yourself, self-expression,
all
of that, all of this kind of stuff. And just to jump straight into it, as somebody who's a Christian, right?
Yeah.
Because, of course, you know, the world of fashion is often associated with
the streets,
all the bad stuff,
right? yeah,
all the interesting stuff, you know, yeah. People just being wild,
flamboyant.
I remember just a couple of days ago, actually, I watched a bit of the Met Gala.
Yes,
and I'm just watching and I'm thinking,
okay,
whoa.
It's
right.
A lot, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I'm thinking, okay, guys, but I guess it's all about that self-expression and being out there. So as a Christian, how have you struck that balance?
I think I've had an ongoing journey within fashion in itself. Initially, when I said, okay, I wanted to get into fashion because that's my language. And to be honest, there's nothing more alluring than the fashion and cultural industries like music. Everything about it, the image, the glitz, the glam, the red carpet, the photography, and the appeal of being relevant and influential and getting into the best spaces. That's what surrounds the image of it. So I think a part of that played a huge part in me pursuing it. But then deep down inside, I felt like there was a frivolousness to it, an emptiness to it. And I said, it used to bother me, but I said, why am I drawn to this thing? Mm. And I think it's later on in my career where I actually really discovered the true power of fashion and culture. And that's exactly it. The things we do in the arts actually shapes culture. It shapes the way we experience our existence. And I realized that through fashion or even music or any other artistic discipline, we have the power to tell stories about ourselves, stories that are true, stories that are false, stories that impact even our own mental health. It's a powerful mental shaping tool.
Wow.
So having to then now have that conversation about myself, about what do I really want to contribute through fashion has been actually an evolution, you know, in terms of, okay, why am I putting out this visual? Why am I creating this design? What is it that I want the audience to feel? And I remember when I got pregnant with my daughter, my firstborn, I'd actually given up on design because honestly, I was making money, but I felt empty.
Wow.
So it's kind of weird to stop something at its peak and be like,
yeah,
I need to figure out what I'm doing. Why am I doing this? What am I actually trying to do? Do I just want to be a factory just producing trendy clothes? People can feel fancy and then come back to me next week. And it seems weird because when you think about the commerce element of fashion, I was on the right track.
Mm.
But I think I've always been a person that wants to do things that are meaningful beyond something that is fleeting. And fashion and trend can often be such a fleeting thing that they happen and it's done and we move on to the next thing. So when I was pregnant with my first daughter, I remember I just said, you know what? I feel like I haven't expressed myself in fashion creatively. And I remember saying, I feel like I have a collection to make. And I remember when I was putting that collection together, like the way everything was just falling together so seamlessly, the elements were coming together, the team that I was going to work with was coming together so effortlessly. And I remember initially I was going to call it The Carnage of Privilege, because I wanted to pop out about my struggle as a privileged person. People don't understand that it's also hard for us privileged people. But, you know, it's funny, like sometimes you have something that you think you're trying to do, but ultimately in the day when it's all said and done, you realize you're just a vessel to tell a deeper and more meaningful story. So I remember after when we did the visuals and the photographer came through and showed me the images, I cried. And I actually realized that I cried so deeply because that art for me was something that I was grappling with internally that I didn't know how to express with words. And I was using all the wrong words to express what was from the depths of my soul at that time. And when I looked back at it, everything was a symbol for something. Like the artists, the models had bandages on their hands, which was a symbol for like how life can be so challenging. You get beaten up and you have these bandages, but these bandages also shape your story and your narrative, and you don't have to be defined by your wounds. They just shape you into who you eventually become. And even like the symbolism of being on the top of the mountain and the three models was like the Holy Trinity, like completion for me. Wow. And then the fluidity of the material actually represented the Holy Spirit. But then one thing I was very cognizant of was I also wanted it to be something that was disseminated well into a commercial space. So then how I packaged it, eventually the name became Ode to Ascana, a poem to the girls. And I remember that then became my most popular collection. Up until today, people are, doors are still opening for me today, like a whole 4 or 5 years later.
That's awesome.
From that collection and from the visuals. And I remember when I released them, I had so many women calling me saying, oh, that collection is so powerful. It's like people couldn't understand like what it was that they were resonating with. And I've always believed that no one in this earth can breathe anything into this world that is not already off them. And when I say not already off them, something that is internally in the depths of who they are as a person. Every day we're engaging with things, we're absorbing things, and those things, in a sense, become a part of us. And I just happened to breathe out this piece of art that not only ministered to me as the person that created it, but actually ministered to so many other people that had just been going through whatever they were going through, and they were open to interpret it and receive it however their heart and soul and eyes received those symbols or those images that they were engaging with. And I remember a lot of people would call and say, oh, I just cried when I saw it. I said, I bawled my eyes out when I saw it.
Right.
And it's that's the power of fashion. That's the power of art, visuals, music, whatever it may be. It really connects to the depths of who we are as people and our experiences and things that we might not necessarily be able to express verbally.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I got a lot of impact even from my mom, even the name eventually. I would say that my mom actually helped name that collection Ode to Ascana for me, because I remember sending it to them. And mom was like, wow, this is like a poem.
Wow.
Then I said, I am never calling any of my campaigns a campaign. I call them visual poems. If I refer to them as campaigns, it's maybe for the general public to understand what it is that's happening. Yeah. But I see the work that I produce more as a poem. It's got layers. It's a story that I'm trying to tell. And I think that's ultimately has been, that was God's divine intervention. I always say, hey, that was not my collection. I was just a vessel, because that for me until today still ministers to me. And it still ministers to many people. And I feel I try to be as honest and intentional about the work that I put out there as much as possible, especially when it comes to something that I am the conductor of, and that's House of Stone. I won't lie, I've had moments that are mess ups where I look back and review my work and I'm like, yee, but the spirit, yeah. I don't know which one I was collaborating with, but it was Shady.
Okay, well, and I'm glad to hear you say that, because it's going to lead to my next question, which is that the world we're in today, right? Yeah. There's such a, again, like I said, image is, it's a very pivotal part of who we are as people. So the way you look, the way you present yourself, worse with social media, you know, you're getting a lot of that. People want to look a certain way. People want to portray themselves in a certain way. And one of the debates, one of the contentions maybe that's been there often, when it's a worldly thing, it's got nothing to do with God, it's okay for people to go all out, to be expressive and do all of this stuff. However, there seems to be this, almost this conflict sometimes between the Bible, what the Bible says about not focusing too much on image, right? But at the same time, as a Christian, you want to be fashionable, you want to be presentable, you want to be, you know, you want to look your best and express yourself in the most authentic way. So the question is that, can a Christian be fashionable without that compromising them in some way, shape or form? What's your take on that?
You know, it's that question cannot really be answered without actually defining what fashionable is. And what I mean by that is that in this day and age, fashionable comes in so many different shapes and forms. So whose standard by which are you setting your fashionability upon, right? So for example, if Christians wanted to, they can be fashionable within their own context, built upon their own rules that they've created and not necessarily worldly rules. Because fashion or fashionability or being fashionable can only exist when a group, a collective en masse agree that this is the popular aesthetic.
Okay.
And then that is what that group then begins to subscribe to en masse. That then becomes the fashion. So I've never been someone that in general, whether it's from a Christian point of view or even like a, you know, mainstream point of view, that's really subscribed to fashionable, because fashionable is fleeting. It doesn't have longevity. It's actually quite wasteful. I've more about being able to express myself through my apparel, which then comes back to what is your style, right? What is your personal style? How do you identify yourself with the way that you dress? And whether we like it or not, whether we engage with fashion intentionally or subconsciously or whatever, it's there. We're experiencing it every day. Every day we put on clothes. So I always say to people, so now that we're engaging with clothing, wouldn't you at least want to engage with it in a way that is at least intentional and that is representative of who you are? Wow. Because whether you walk into a room today with, you've got your Nike cap on there, you got your Nike. I'm like, he's a Nike. He likes Nike, right? Mm-hmm. What does that say about you? Those are sort of like signifiers about who you are to me. And how I receive it might be completely different from why you are wearing it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Christians shouldn't necessarily pursue being fashionable, but they should pursue to express themselves in a way that makes them proud and also makes the kingdom of God proud. I've also had a challenge with that myself, because on my journey, I really also wanted to belong. Back in the days, there in my high school, I'd be there in the club in my little Kafrikam dress. And I remember initially when I got there and I saw the other girls in these really, really short dresses, I said, that is really short. But guess what? I wanted to belong. I wanted to have friends. I didn't want to look like the odd one or the weirdo. Mm-hmm. So then I subscribed to those symbols of that aesthetic so that I could belong to that group. So I always say, as Christians, what group do you belong to? You know, who do you represent when you're out there in the streets? You know, are you representing the group that you say you belong to, or are you representing the streets? You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just say choose intentionality. We can't disregard fashion, whether we like it or not. As I said, we engage with it every day. So, yeah, be intentional.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you answered the next question I was going to ask, because it was going to be, what role does fashion play in a Christian's life? And I think you've perfectly kind of addressed that in the sense. And what I'm getting is that it's not about dressing to keep up with the trends, but it's dressing with a purpose.
Yeah.
Because I've never really, I mean, it's stuff that you have at the back of your mind, but the way you brought it out today, like, you're the way you dress, the way you style yourself is telling a story.
Yeah.
And as and it's actually true, you know, you can literally make up a story or a conclusion about someone just by looking at them and the way they're dressed. You can tell, okay, that's a very young person, or that's a very trendy person. Or
that's a person trying to be young.
Yeah, exactly. You know what
I mean? Yeah. Awkward.
Exactly. But beyond that, even like you can kind of tell certain temperaments by someone's dressing. Like you can tell this is quite an aggressive. I don't know how it is. You can't deduce it. Like this is an aggressive person just by they haven't said anything. They walk in the way they're dressed and you kind of feel this is quite an aggressive person.
And just to even add, you're literally touching on the psychology of fashion. You can even from the color. Like, have you ever noticed how sometimes you feel happier around people that wear colorful clothing?
Yes.
You don't actually understand why you gravitate towards them. You don't understand why their aura just feels so happy-go-lucky. And then when you see people in darker shades, it almost signifies, I'm a serious person. If you're coming here, you better come with some seriousness. We don't want, you know, chapa in the building. Yeah. We don't need that. So there are all these like symbols that we pick up along the way subliminally that we don't actually realize we're putting out. And I always say to people that sometimes the way you dress can open or close a door for you.
Hmm.
Literally. Okay. And
let's go there.
And what I mean by that is, so for example, my belonging last year into the group that I ended up belonging to in terms of the international designers, I remember the first day I went in there, and I was very conscious about the way I was dressing. The first day I went in there, I was like, I went kind of like casual.
Mm.
When I saw how the bigger designers were dressing, I said, no, I think I need to, you know, level up.
Uh-huh.
But what level up was for their aesthetic, if I'm to define it, is very minimalistic. It's either you're wearing all black, you're either wearing layers. I remember going in one day in my all black layers and they were all going crazy. They're like, you look amazing today. And I was like, I caught the symbols. I caught the silhouettes. I read the room. So that in itself, I actually noticed that they suddenly also relaxed towards me.
Mm.
Suddenly they were more, come in, be close with us. So it's weird that fashion has the capacity to do that, not only within a fashion context, but even outside. When you walk into a boardroom,
mm-hmm.
you're not just going to go in there in pajamas or lackadaisical, like, and you're dealing with maybe more mature people who are all wearing suits and you're there looking casual. Until you're Elon Musk or until people know you're Elon Musk, you are not rocking up here in a pajama.
Yeah. mm-hmm.
You know, maybe when you're at that level, come in pajamas, no one cares. We all know you're Elon Musk. You can get away with it. But until then, you need to know how to present yourself to the public in order to receive the outcome that you want out of a situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I love that.
Mm.
I love that. Wow. So from what I'm getting, you're talking about intentionality.
Yeah.
You're talking about reading the room, understanding what's required. What's the aesthetic? What's appropriate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming back again to the Bible, you know, the Bible talks a lot about, if you look in the Old Testament, there were specific things that the priest had to wear. There's a whole attire regimen that was there to say, if you're serving in this capacity, you have to look a certain way.
Yeah.
Then it goes on to talk about things like modesty, that, you know, women should dress modestly and whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember...
And to add to that, I find it interesting, like I went over it a number of times last week. In Revelation, when they talk about Jesus coming back, they are so detailed about what he's wearing. And I'm like, what? We actually read it here.
I feel like I need to read that.
We actually read it here at the office.
Yeah.
And I had the designers. I'm like, I want you guys to draw this.
Okay.
Right.
So they're actually working on
that
scripture and draw the
that.
Whole thing. And we were like, what? Why were they so detailed?
What verse? Do you remember the verse? Give the people the verse.
let me try and look
while you're finding it. But that's crazy, right? That the Bible says so much about appearance. Because we often think, hey, God just looks at the heart. God doesn't care about all of this stuff, right? But then you're like, okay, so there's all this detail. Jesus is wearing this in Revelation chapter 1, I know, is Jesus, when John has that revelation of Jesus, he gives a detailed description of how he's wearing a white robe, and there's a golden sash around his chest.
Yes.
So I'm like, what? But then, of course, you know, Paul also talks about, like I'm saying, the way women should adorn yeah. themselves and how they should look. And yeah. so there's a godly, like, I guess like you're saying, that there's aesthetic. A way that you can look that can portray a certain, mm-hmm. I guess, value system even,
yeah.
right? And so I guess I want to speak a bit, I wanted to speak a bit into that, because I know this can be a bit controversial, especially in our day-to-day, mm. where, again, even in the church, you're getting people say, hey, this is who I am, this is how I want to look. Mm. I've had Sundays where I lead worship in church. I'll be honest, I've had Sundays where I'm up there, mm. and somebody just walks to the front, and it's like,
cleavage.
Tons of cleavage, man. And I'm like, hey, can you just have mercy on a brother? You know what I'm saying?
That's so actually, you know, Revelation 1, 12 to 16.
Mm. Revelation 1, 12 to 16.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have you read that just now. Yeah. Let me just stress my point. Let me just stress my
He's
point.
He's done
right?
with the temptation. Like, yeah, just stop. Like.
Yeah, no, I think I'm a bit, I'm numb now. I'm numb. I'm good. Because I've seen a lot, right?
Yeah, you're like, I'm okay, good. I'm
but
good.
But then I'm also thinking, you also have the flip side, which is that yeah. sometimes people, and this is both men and women, people yeah. just want to express themselves in a certain way, mm. you know. So then the question becomes, where's that line to say, okay, this is no longer appropriate mm. for church or for the community that you're a part of. Mm. But then at the same time, you also don't want to put everybody in a cookie cutter where mm. you want, just because we're church folk, we all have to look
No,
a certain way. So I think that there is kind of where I would want us to.
I feel like at the end of the day, I also feel in church we don't have enough of the teachings to really bring people to that awareness. And I think because we don't engage enough with presentation in the church, you often have it being lost in translation. And mm-hmm. people are like, oh, you guys are being uppity, you're being what? But let's say if we want to, for the audience now, ultimately, we actually, technically speaking, you're not actually supposed to show your shape as a woman in church. So basically, okay. It's like there should be no body cons. There should really be no really tight fitting stuff, right? But the thing is, because we're in the modern age and we like to change the word for our comfortability, which we often do as Christians. There's so many things that we just wake up one day and decide, we're changing the Bible just to make ourselves comfortable, or make the Bible conform to the mood of the times in culture. Mm-hmm. And I think what the church really needs is for us to have those teachings and for people to be convicted. But at the same time, we're not going to shun people from the church because they haven't yet been convicted.
Mm. Then I'm sorry to interject. I guess I want you to re-emphasize that point and maybe unpack it a bit more. When you say you're not really supposed to show your shape as a woman,
so
what exactly does that mean?
So for example, right, even if you look at the descriptors of garments in the Bible, most mm-hmm. of the garments did not show shape.
Absolutely.
Both male or female, there right. was really no, it was almost like tent living. Uh-huh. You know, there was no like accentuation of a bottom, no accentuation of your cleavage area. So I feel like if you keep that in mind, there's so many styles out there that are available to you.
Right.
That you can still look stylish. You can still represent yourself. You can style it in your own unique way. And I've actually been seeing a lot of people from not even our Christian community, actually Muslim community, mm-hmm. that now have modest dressing. And those people are so stylish. Oh my goodness. They are so stylish, but they're still modest.
Yeah. The two ladies that I follow on Instagram, they're Muslim. Yeah. And they're, just like really, really fashionable, but very, very modest.
Modest, elegant.
But very elegant.
Respectable.
Yeah.
But they're enjoying themselves with fashion. They're expressing themselves with fashion. And I often feel like the narrative, people desire too much to be popular and to be doing what's cool rather than doing things that actually make sense and represent them properly in life. Mm. I think our value system and what we place as most relevant is completely warped as a society. For me, it's so confusing to me that there's a certain aesthetic that you need to have as a woman in Zimbabwe to be seen as desirable or to go up, even to elevate in corporate world. And I remember I made a joke just the other day on my social media, and I was saying, I need to get some respect around these streets and get myself a weave. You know, like, I said that.
I think I saw that.
Yeah. And the reason I made that joke is because it's a reality. Like, if we observe, and people that are observant, like myself, because I'm an artist, part of my job is to be observant of my environment. Mm-hmm. And observing my environment, I've observed that people that actually are going up in the ranks are actually people with the weaves.
Mm.
There's a certain way they dress. There's a certain way they look. There's a certain shape about them. There's a certain behavior. So I'm not completely oblivious to these things. So that's why I made that joke that I think to get some respect around here, let me get me a weave. Who's going to buy me a weave?
I can't.
Because my husband, my husband's not going to do it.
I can't see you in a weave.
I'm taking donations.
I can't see you in a weave.
So it's those certain things where you actually realize that, oh, okay, so now we're all subscribing to a single image. And this image now is saying that that is the value. That is the only value, which I think is incorrect.
Right.
But yeah, I think that warped mindset in society where I think someone in the Bible says, what is wrong, you say is right. And I'm not saying that weaves are wrong. That's not what I'm saying. Just catch that. But basically, we're living in a society where almost people were doing the wrong things, in quotations, are the ones that are getting elevated. You get the Kim Kardashians, you get the other locals that we get around here having their little videos that they make or dressing the way they dress that's very enticing. And it seems like their life is very comfortable. It seems like they're getting elevated. Who wants to struggle? So when you see that and you get those signifiers that, oh, people who do 1, 2, 3, they are being elevated in society, that influences younger generations or women who don't yet know themselves to want to place and position themselves mm-hmm. to look like that in hopes that they too also rise in society.
Mm.
So we need to be really careful about what we also promote as a culture, as a society, what we elevate. I'm not saying that we need to outrightly like shun people or say, oh, you're bad for doing this. I don't believe in that either. But I also believe that it shouldn't be celebrated the way it is celebrated in society. Yeah.
So from what you're saying, should Christians be more discerning then about what they wear? Not just in terms of the trends, but also in terms of who's behind the design, the brand, and that sort of thing? Or is it just one of those, okay, now we're being over spiritual, or now we're digging in too deep? Is there some sort of influence? Because from what I'm gathering from this discussion is that it does have an influence. You know, the way you dress, the stuff that you have, kind of has an influence, whether it's spiritual or not, I don't know, but there's some sort of influence that it has.
Okay, look, I don't want to be so strict and police people, but I say, yes, we should care about what we wear. We should care about who's making it and what spirit is behind it. And I remember, like, my mom used to say when I was younger that she was a bit hesitant about secondhand clothing because it was worn by someone. Mm. Don't really know what the person was doing. But at the same time, as children of God, we have the power also to cancel things. Mm. So if we get something, we can pray over it and be like, God bless me, whatever. But I also feel like if you also know that the person who's made this garment is trafficking children and you're away, but you're like, I don't care, I just want to be cool and hip, that's problematic. And I can give an example where last year I was supposed to go to a fashion show in London by this one designer whose name I've forgotten, but for some odd reason, actually I was unwell, I suddenly got unwell and I couldn't make it. And I remember some of my colleagues were sending me videos and I said, that is one of the most satanic looking fashion shows I have ever seen. And I said, thank you, God, that I'm here well rested. Because imagine if you're not there in that atmosphere. And the reality, guys, whether we like it or not, there's some people that are actually practicing witchcraft. That's a reality. People might not talk about it, but they're there. They're even here in Zimbabwe practicing it, and they will tell you, I'm a witch. So you need to really be careful.
And that's becoming a trend these days. How
it's so problematic. So for me, I felt like me getting unwell at that time was actually just God saying, girl, you don't want that atmosphere. You don't want to be in that atmosphere. The next day, I was better. I was up again. I was like, hey, ready for the festivities. And I remember asking them, how was that fashion show? Look, you know, so funny. My friend, not even Christian or anything, she was like, it was weird. It just felt weird.
So it was
But you're absorbing something, and it's absorbing an energy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, do you really want to partake of those things? Then you're going to go buy that designer's clothing. So I think if you are aware of the designers, their backgrounds, and the things they practice, choose intentionality. I always say choose intentionality. Say no.
I like that. Which leads to my next question, which could be a little controversial. You can, you can let me know if you want to answer this one.
Okay.
But why are so many fashion designers gay?
I don't know.
So I'll tell you one of the most.
Is that a fact, though? Or is it that,
you know,
no, popular ones are that way?
Perhaps. Or the ones that we know, right? Mm-hmm. But then you watch and, okay, I'll tell you this. This is the one that really broke my heart.
Yeah.
I have to say this.
Okay.
I was traveling several years back. I was traveling somewhere. I don't remember where, but from somewhere. Mm-hmm. Then it was a long haul flight. And I, you know, in flight entertainment, whatever. Then I started watching documentaries.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I come across this Tom Ford documentary.
I knew you were going to say Tom Ford.
I knew. Know, and I also like
guys,
the style.
You've got to understand. Like, Tom Ford. I love Tom Ford, right? So I'm watching this documentary and I'm just like, so halfway through the documentary, he's just talking about his partner and whatever. I think the partner then passed away recently, but was much older and whatever. But then I'm just like, Tom,
I didn't know.
Bruv, I'm like, why, my G? Why?
I'm sure a lot of ladies were like, why too? When they found out, they're like, why?
But then, but then just generally, when you look at, you know, you watch fashion shows and you watch all of this stuff, there just seems to be a lot of that kind of energy, if I can call it that. Now, I may be wrong. I may be mistaken. I don't know all the stats and all the numbers. But I'm just saying, but this just, why is there that general thing, right? That it seems like the gatekeepers in the fashion industry seem to generally be.
You know, I wish I had the answer for that very same thing. Because I've also asked myself the same question, especially when it comes to black African designers that are on the map internationally. Actually, the majority of them are black gay guys. And I said, okay, so you're telling me that men, let's leave it at that, men can dress women better than women can dress women, if that makes sense.
Yes,
so
that's a valid question, right?
So it's interesting, but look, I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but sometimes it does feel like there's a spiritual agenda contending for our souls, but through fashion. And it's almost like you are degrading your own body even by the way you dress, right? And some of the outfits that people even put on, you're just like, no, this is not making sense. A model be walking down the runway with their butt cheeks out, and I'm like, where are we wearing that outfit? Where exactly are we going? So sometimes fashion, yes, I understand it can be more than just wearable fashion. It sometimes can be political commentary. Sometimes it can be political commentary, social commentary, just art, like craftsmanship being presented. And other times, just like, we don't understand. Even I sometimes don't understand what's going on. I'm just like, ha! And I won't lie, sometimes I've had to ask God, why am I in this industry? Why did you give me a pool? But I remember having a really deep conversation with one of my colleagues, and she said, sometimes you're called into those spaces to transform them.
Nice.
And to also bring other people in to help you transform, because you can't do it all by yourself, right? You're going to have to get in there, assess it. And sometimes I felt like I was a spy last year. I genuinely felt like I was a spy that was put into circles to see things, to see how to navigate the situation. Came out, I said, yo, guys, this is how we're going to do it. So I feel like sometimes as a Christian, when you find yourself in those spaces, not for you to go there and conform, it's for you to go in there and transform the atmosphere and to dominate and take over.
I am so feeling that.
That's why, and you know, I feel like we need to put as much money into the arts as the world puts into the arts. We're shaping mindsets through the things that we put out there. I love this thing, your ear and eye gates. That's all arts and culture.
Yes.
We engage with it daily. On the radio, we engage with it. Even the people we're going to put on our radio listen to, what are they saying to me?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm so over like these toxic stories on radio. It just fills your soul with toxicity, and that is all that is available to us as a society. How do we build a nation if that's all we talk about is people and their dramas, and it's just dirty stuff that we're talking about. And the same thing applies to fashion. What are we putting out there? How are we dressing people on the runway so that people have an allure and a desire to want to dress in a way that honors their body, that represents them well? What are we highlighting in fashion magazines? What are we highlighting on radio? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And I definitely like your approach, because a lot of the times when you're a Christian and you're given this gift and this calling, a lot of the times the inclination is to, let me make a Christian label, or let me start fashion shows in the church. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of counterproductive. Mm-hmm. Whereas we need more CIOs. We need more spies.
You know what I mean? More agents.
But
why I loved that quote of yours is that when you're not going there to conform, you're going there to transform.
Yeah.
Because those spaces can never transform if there's no light that's put in there. And we become the light that's in there.
And it's funny, light is so much brighter than darkness that when you're doing something that radiates light, people are just attracted to it.
Exactly.
Like, I'll give an example from last year. I was like the youngest designer there. When everyone saw my collection, the established designers came to me and they were like, wow, your collection. They couldn't understand it. That's how I knew it was something supernatural was happening in the spirit. I said, amen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, I always feel like God is the way maker. And for me, I just say, no, guide me, help me to at least produce work that really impacts people in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And this will now then lead me to just mention something, because it's so important for me personally to mention it. I created this short film called Exodus, and it was a multi-layered fashion film narrative that I created with my colleagues, Derek, Shilert, you know, shout out, you know, little plug over there, Aneunu, right? And I remember after creating it, was such an intuitive thing that we created. I said, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do da-da-da, and it came out so beautifully. And I remember after releasing it, I had a couple of people approach me, and the one that was the most impactful in terms of feedback was like, I watched it, and I went to bed, and I fell asleep so peacefully. I don't sleep peacefully.
Wow.
That is the power
of
art.
Awesome.
That literally when someone can engage with your artwork, you can give them peace. Or it can antagonize your spirit.
Exactly.
Now you're wondering, why am I so uneasy? Why do I feel like, today I'm stressed, eh? You know, so we really need to be conscious of the things that we are taking in, and also what we're giving out to the world. What sort of like atmosphere and energy do we want to put out there? What spirit do we want to put out there? And can I mention, have you seen the latest painting of the king?
King Charles? I haven't.
No.
Please go. Go see that. Then you'll see the power of art. That piece by Jonathan Yeo of Prince Charles has got everyone going crazy.
Wow.
The symbolism, the color choice, everything about it. It's like whether this person was intentional, that person was used to narrate something. And I think when we look back on that piece of art in history, it's going to be a case study for centuries to come.
Hmm.
It is... it's piping hot.
Okay.
Go check it out. So, the power of...
the power of art.
Mm.
Wow. You spoke about Exodus. Is it available publicly?
Yes. I put it on my House of Stone
YouTube
channel.
Okay, great.
And, that was really...
sounds exciting, because the people you worked with are really talented. Derek.
Really? Derek. I'm a fan. Yeah, very really talented people.
Yeah.
But that one is also multifaceted. It was also commenting on the times of COVID, how we also just want to escape, and technology is also helping us to escape. And what is it to migrate? Do you know what I mean? And that's why I think I played with the word Exodus, because Exodus pretty much is all about migration from one place to another, like to the promised land. So I feel like I tend to throw in these little undertones of like my personal beliefs into my stories. And even with one of my other collections, I called it Seed of Esther. And the gatekeepers were archangels, named after different archangels. Yeah. And I was just like, you know, just commenting on society and how they're all these gatekeepers and people that guard the gates, you know. And I feel like that's why I entered fashion. Ultimately, the day, it was never really truly to sell clothes. Yes, the commerce of it still matters to me, but predominantly I am a storyteller, but I was never good at writing. I was never really good at public speaking, but I was good at composing visuals and putting together clothing, music, picking models, whatever it may be. I had a good eye. So I used that to my benefit, and that's how I now tell stories today.
I love this. I love everything you're saying tonight because, again, you know, I think for me, the fact that you've not compromised, you've...
Yeah, I've tried. And
it's a fight, I know.
Times, I would lie.
I know it's a fight. You know, I think it's a fight for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, but just the fact that you've walked the journey, you're still walking the journey, you know. You've
You mentioned, we've known you since youth.
Yes!
And it's been a journey, you know.
It's so crazy.
It's been a journey. And I love
it. And even since then, you were just all about fashion.
Yeah, I guess you see. I guess
it was always there.
So, and I think that's really important. You know, I want to read a quick quote. Then, as we get ready to wrap up, there's a quote by a guy called Fyodor Dostoevsky.
Okay,
should look him up. Phenomenal guy. He says he's a philosopher. He says that first art imitates life, then life will imitate art, then life will find its very existence from the arts.
Wow.
And I think that is such a true progression of, if you look at our society today, that art initially does imitate life, right? But then if you look at the way that things progress, we're now at a place in our world where a lot of life is determined by the arts, is determined by what people see. We grew up on 90s music and hip hop and R&B, so the way we dressed, the way we looked, the way we spoke, you know, everything that our lives revolved around was based on that. So sometimes I look back at some of the stuff I used to listen to, you know, I was a huge DMX lover, hip hop, Nas, you know, the works, Wu-Tang, even Diddy, but the funny thing is, I look at some of the pictures from back then, you know, all the baggy clothes, the Timberlands, that was art, and it literally influenced who we were and how we behaved. True. And that's because that's what we aspired to.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at art now, the dude who did the Nike shoes with the 666. What's his face?
Oh, Little Nas.
So now you have all of that kind of madness happening, you know?
He apparently had his blood in the...
Yeah, bruh.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, it goes to show you the power of art and how it really does influence us, whether we care to admit it or not, you know. And so I think it's really critical, especially, you know, if somebody who's a Christian, designer, having you here and sharing what you're sharing. I think as we wrap up, what I want to just find out from you, Danai, is what would your advice be to two groups of people? I think firstly to somebody, maybe a young person who's a Christian, who wants to study fashion, who wants to actually get into the fashion industry the way that you have. What would your advice be to somebody like that? Then secondly, what would your advice be to just the Christian, you know, the Christian in general, just in terms of their choices, in terms of how they dress, how they look, what should influence that?
Okay. I think to the young student, there are two things I would say. I'd say, ask yourself, why fashion? I think it's really important. I think oftentimes you say, I like this thing, but you've never really dissected why you're gravitating towards that as a particular career. You find that a lot of the time when you start writing down the reasons, there's a lot of vanity involved, right? Mm. So when you start writing down the vanity aspects, when they start to come out, if they do come out, it means it's about you. It's not about what you can give to the world through this thing. Mm. So you need to reassess whether this is really something that you should pursue or whether it's going to be your downfall. Literally. So ask yourself those questions. And I always say to anyone within the arts that I think the reason why it's so challenging to be in the arts is because our souls are literally being contended for, because we are conductors of culture. We are the ones that actually influence culture. We are the ones that people, our work technically is what people engage with on a daily basis that influence behaviors. So if you are creating work that's going to be so impactful, that's going to influence this world for God and influence this world towards God, the devil doesn't want that.
Yeah,
he's going to fight you. So it's not going to be an easy battle. But the nice thing about it is that we know we've already won, right? So that should at least hopefully empower you to keep pushing forward. And then what is the final question again?
To the Christian. Just in terms of their choices, the process. I think the process they engage when choosing what to wear and how to look.
Okay. For me, are you honoring your body? Do you feel a sense of pride and dignity and respect for self when you walk out into the world? I think ultimately that's where it starts. And also consider also your audience, guys. Like a lot of times, always like, it's about me, because we're living in this self-love, self-me age. You know what I mean? So it's always, you always start with yourself. Yes, fair and fine, but it can't always end with yourself. Consider your audience. If maybe my dad were here, or if maybe the pastor were here, how maybe would he feel? So out of respect for others, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I understand we don't want you to lose your identity. You can still have your identity and dress appropriately. But we need to realize that we no longer live in, we don't live in isolation. We're not on an island. Yeah. We live with other people. And for us to live in peace with other people, we need to be considerate. Otherwise, if I wanted to strangle Becky, who annoyed me 2 seconds ago, I would have strangled her already. But that's not how society works. We need to be considerate of other people. And that also applies to the way we dress. So I think as a Christian, just think of those points.
The way you dress might strangle.
Yeah, you know, you might suffocate. You know, and you know, I know a lot of like women hate it when you say you're going to cause a brother to fall. And it's like, hey, the brother must control himself. It takes two people to tango. Brother must control himself, you too. It's not a one-sided thing. It's not like a solo player's game. Everyone's playing this game. It's a team match kind of situation. So I think, yeah, just consider those points.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm good.
You good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love this, man.
This is awesome.
Yeah. I'll read that verse for you.
Yeah, please. Well, please go ahead. I was going to ask you.
So it's Revelation 1. From verse 12 says, then I turned to see the voice that was speaking to me. This is John, obviously, talking about his revelation, what he's seeing. And said, after I turned, I saw 7 golden lampstands. In the midst of the lampstand, I saw someone like the Son of Man, dressed in a robe, reaching to his feet, with a golden sash wrapped around his chest. His head were white, like white wool, like snow, and his eyes were flashing like flames of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze refined in a furnace, and his voice was like the sound of many waters. In his right hand were 7 stars, and from his mouth came a sharp two-edged sword. So, and his face was reflecting his majesty, the Shekinah glory, like the sun in all its power at midday. It's so descriptive.
I feel like I need, is it called Midjourney AI? I'm about to copy paste that.
Like, and see what that looks like.
And see what that looks like. That looks like wild, fantasy adventure right up my lane.
I remember, like, early days when I became a Christian, that scripture used to freak me out.
Really?
Especially the part where it says, and I fell at his feet as though dead. I was like, what?
Even the descriptor of angels. Angels are not cute.
Yeah, no, right? We were talking about that the other day.
It's like,
and there's a reason they used to say, do not be afraid.
Yeah.
Yes, now that makes sense. It's so true.
Yeah, so I just find that the way God is so descriptive.
Yeah.
You know, and you start thinking, yo, guys.
And then also, like, on the flip side, it's the same kind of thing. How detailed and descriptive they talked about John the Baptist. You know, they'll describe what he wore, a leather belt, the tunic, the whatnot, and what it was made of. I'm like, why are you telling me this?
It's giving so it matters.
It matters.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, why did that writer go through that effort of having to describe. Not a lot of other people, they just say there was a man or there's a rich young man.
Yeah, that's actually
But certain
really true.
People, they describe how they dressed, what they were wearing, why.
And you know, the Bible is not giving you Nigerian movie with unnecessary scenes. It gives you the necessary scenes.
The necessary detail.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think from now on, when I'm hosting the podcast, I'll be like, yeah, this is Cookie Monster, and I'm wearing a pair of blue Nikes.
Yeah, it literally gave that.
Sweatpants.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a Nike fan, people.
Yeah.
Birthday gifts. We know it will start.
My birthday is in how many days?
It's in 10 days.
10 days. No, 13. 13 days.
I felt it in the atmosphere.
You see, you're a spiritual woman. You're a spiritual woman. All right. Anyway, guys, it's been real. It's been great. Awesome. Thank you so much, Danai.
Thank you. I hope I didn't say anything that gets me cancelled.
No.
But thank you for the privilege.
We shall see. We shall see. All right. Any parting words from you before we wrap up?
No, you know, I don't have any parting words except for thank you for having me. This was amazing. The vibes here are correct, people.
Yeah.
And I'm just,
we got an endorsement.
There we go.
I'm endorsing for free, too.
And that's big coming from you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Mr. Kent, we're good?
Yeah, we're good.
Awesome. Thank you guys for listening. If you have any questions, comments, complaints. hope we got none of those. But you know where to reach us. Thank you for listening, and I really hope and pray that you listen with spiritual ears to hear everything that was shared today. Lots of wisdom, lots of insights. So yeah, and please go easy on the cleavage. Anyway, and then also Owns, guys. Owns also shy. Hey, some of the stuff that Owns are now wearing these days, guys. Let's just I don't know what
the women also don't want to fall, guys.
Exactly.
Yeah, the ladies, the sisters don't want to fall as well. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So let's not be strangling each other. Anyway, God bless you guys. We're out. Peace.
Bye.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Radiant Culture Podcast. If you want to make a contribution, make a suggestion, or have a request, you can get in touch with us via email on radiant@thehub.co.zw or inbox us on Facebook and Twitter. Look out for the next episode and remember to share this one with everybody you know. God bless.
It's hot. It's fresh. It's uncut. #RealTalk on the Radiant Culture Podcast.